What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Sixth Sense Podcast. I'm joined in studios by the Team 1200's producer, The Creech. What's up, man?
How's it going, buddy? Glad to be back.
Yeah, and joining us on the bat phone from Atlanta, Francois. Bonsoir. How are you?
Hey, how are you? It's actually, it would still be like bonjour since there's no time difference between Atlanta and Ottawa, but I applaud your effort to...
Bonsoir sounds a lot better, though. I appreciate that.
It could be pretty cool if we were calling our Thrashers Insider right now, but I guess not.
Yeah, I know. It's well, we got into this before I moved to Atlanta, but hey, at least it allows me to keep my allegiance to the Senators and everything like that. So there are no conflicts of interest right now. It's a beautiful day here today. It's Martin Luther King weekend in Atlanta, so Monday's a holiday. So I think the only thing that was missing before you brought me on is like give me some kick-ass Dirty South intro music by like Waka Flocka Flame or something.
Yeah, we can get into that a little bit later. I'll throw that in when I actually edit the podcast. So Ottawa, 8-1-1 in their last 10. They're on a 4-game winning streak, I believe, and they are 10-1-2 since the acquisition of Kyle Turris. Not bad, fellas. Not bad at all.
No, it's pretty good. I mean, I watched the game last night, and, well, you know, I've watched pretty much every game this season. And, well, first of all, I'm so glad we beat Montreal. Like, I can't stand their fans. That has become a real debauchery of an organization. And after they scored that first goal on, like, the Plekanec flop shot, and they started into that ole ole chant, like, you know, I felt like I was, like, there was, like, smoke coming out of my ears, you know what I mean? So I'm so glad we beat those guys.
Yeah, same. There's not too many teams I like beating more than Montreal and Toronto, so it's always good to beat the Habs, even though they kind of spoiled the party for 15 minutes or so there by scoring late in the third period. It was still nice to Alfie get the winner in the shootout there, 5-1 price.
Yeah. I mean, but the thing is, like, I don't know, it just seems like Montreal's just been so shitty this year, yet like they play way over their heads because they're playing Ottawa, and the fans, you know, like when they go ahead on the Plekanec goal, you know, of course the fans are planning the Stanley Cup parade because they're beating Ottawa. Like, it's just always that same notion, you know. It's just got so sick of it, but it was good that we got the extra point in that one.
But
I think they kind of go ahead, Grin.
Yeah, I was just gonna say Rene Bourque, he's gonna put them over the top this year.
Yeah, of course, because we all know he's a legitimate first line scorer.
In fairness to Bourque, though, he actually has more points in the last three seasons than Mike Camilleri. So, I don't know.
I'd have more points picking up Eginla's garbage in the last three seasons than Mike Camilleri.
So, what are your original thoughts on this Montreal deal that just actually happened?
How can that not be good for Calgary? He's already wearing number 93.
Oh, yeah. I noticed that. Cool. Yeah, class act. This guy comes into Calgary with a reputation for kind of being like a selfish me-first player. And there, in his first game, he's wearing Dougie Gilmore's 93, the old vintage Flames jersey, too. Just, it was a fitting tribute.
Wow.
Yeah, oh, classic.
So I hadn't realized that right away. I saw the clip of him taking the pregame last night, but I didn't have cable till today, actually, just moved. So I was asking Nichols on the way in here, I was like, were they all wearing 93 in the warm-up, or is that the number he chose? He's like, no, he's wearing 93.
It was like Jackie Robinson Day. It was Dougie Gilmore Day in Calgary. Like when all those guys were number 42 on Jackie Robinson Day in the big league.
That's what I kind of thought it might have been. It's like, he didn't wear 93, did he? They're wearing the vintage jersey.
But getting back to your point about Jay Feaster bringing in Mike Camilleri, like, yeah, he didn't have to give up that much, so to speak, but he gave up a second round pick. This is probably an organization that should acknowledge that its best player is a 36-year-old goaltender. Its best goal scorer is 34 years of age. His best years are behind him. That's an organization that can't acknowledge that they should be rebuilding. They're still going for it. They hope that they can get in, but realistically, this isn't a team that even can make some damage or some difference or some headlines in the playoffs.
No, I totally agree with you. And on the other side of things, I mean, you know, Montreal is arguably a team that should be preparing a rebuild now, and Pierre Gauthier trades his arguably his best tradable asset besides Carey Price for 40 cents on the dollar. So, I mean, the only thing that Feaster might be able to bail Feaster out of this, and I think we talked about this earlier, is in the event that Calgary does bottom out, he at least can still move Camilleri and Iginla in the event that he chooses to waive his no-trade clause for some parts to start a rebuild. Gauthier has nothing because, I mean, the only guy he could trade to bring in, you know, draft picks and young blue chip prospects is Price or Subban, and you're not going to trade either of those two. So, I mean, I still think Gauthier got fleeced on this deal. I don't agree with Feaster bringing in Camilleri because they should be rebuilding, but at least Camilleri is a tradable asset. What can Montreal get for Rene Bourque? You know, nothing.
I just thought it was a bit of a knee-jerk reaction. Kind of reminded me of when Sutter traded Phaneuf to the Leafs for nothing, for no reason, instead of shopping around. I just thought Camilleri made those comments, and then next thing you know, he's shipping the bags for Rene Bourque. And I thought he could have got a better deal.
No, that deal had been in the works for weeks. That's why he was not pulled from a hockey game.
Pierre Gauthier made one phone call.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But judging from the post... You know,
I mean, I'm amazed by some of these trades that appear to be a total lack of GM attempting to create a market for a player. I mean, we saw it years ago with the Joe Thornton trade out of Boston, and they ended up being able to sign Chera by getting rid of Thornton. But the point is that, you know, he got way less for Thornton than he could have got because he only really made one phone call. And it kind of amazes me that you see these trades go down sometimes and you're just kind of left scratching your head.
Yeah, no, it's a fair point, especially because this is such a competitive industry. There are only 30 GM jobs around the league. If you're not doing your due diligence, Christ, you might be out of a job for, you know, 5, 10, 15 years. Like, when does that opportunity ever come around? Look at John Ferguson Jr., for example.
He handed out a lot of no trade, no movement clauses there.
That's awful. It's awful. Anyways, let's get back to the Senators here, guys. They're 10-1-2 since Kyle Turris was acquired. Do you guys throw that much credit towards what Kyle Turris has done for this team, or is this just a team that's kind of caught fire and is playing their asses off right now?
I think it's probably a little bit of both. Okay. I think there's definitely a bit of a lightning in the bottle type of aspect to it. And, you know, I think Kyle Turris has been great. I think the past two games, you know, even the Ranger game where I don't think he factored on the score sheet, I thought was his best game in a Senators uniform. And I think, He gives us a legitimate second scoring line, which I don't think we've ever had.
Right now, there's some fan of Mike Fisher's listening to this program, and they're crying.
Yeah, I don't think... And you know what? I mean, at the end of the day, even if Turris ends up putting up comparable point production than Fisher, the one thing he brings to the table that Fisher didn't have is the offensive skill set. Like, I just think he's more of an offensive threat than Fisher was. And I don't think we can discount the fact that Jason Spezza has gone into beast mode since the All-Star selection. So I don't know if he's in full-blown, like, FU mode, like, oh, you don't think I'm an All-Star? Well, I'll show you. But here he is back, you know, on the cusp of being back in the top five in NHL scoring. And a stretch of that, I think, still with McCauley recovering from the injury. So I think we, you know, have to give Spezza credit as well.
Yeah, and on top of that, I think Craig Anderson's actually turned his game around quite a bit too. Like, I find that most of their wins this season, they had more or less done it in spite of him. But now he's put up some solid back-to-back, at least four games probably in a row. He's played very solid. Last night he was unbelievable.
Yeah,
and
I think
the Ranger game.
I think I forget which game it was. It might have been coming into the not last night's game, but the game before. I think he was 8-2-2 in his last 12. And yeah, he's on fire right now. I think he was the NHL's third star of the week last week, and he's
playing
just
very well though.
Yeah, and he got his first shutout this week.
He's not just collecting wins; he's making big saves.
Absolutely, he's the reason why they won that Rangers game. He kept them in it early, and then yeah, they capitalized. And how often have we been able to say that about a Senators goaltender in a long time?
Definitely. I mean, I went to the Tampa game, and we really had no business even being in that game based on how the first two periods went. And Anderson held us in, and we ended up pulling that one out. And I think the Montreal game was another game like that where we were totally outclassed in the first or second period, at least in terms of effort. And Anderson, you know, he hung us in there long enough that we could get our legs under us, and we really took over in the third period. But the point is that Anderson allowed us to be able to do that.
It sounds like he pretty much stole that game last night. I didn't catch most of the first and second period. I was out to dinner. But I was listening to the game on the radio, and then I saw the third period in overtime when I got back. But every comment that that they were making, Shribes and Gordy there, was that the center's got to do something in the third period because they were just getting dominated and they weren't getting anything going. So it sounded like Anderson was keeping them in it, making some big saves. Even on that tying goal, he stopped the point shot, stopped the rebound, like stretched out for it, and they scored on the third shot. Was it their Pacioretty? Yeah, scored on the third shot. So yeah. He stopped a breakaway. I saw the Pocanis breakaway he stopped earlier. That was a nice save on that one, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and even on that tying goal, I mean, he made an outstanding save just on that first rebound, and that's not on him that the second rebound got banged in. I think that's on his defense for not clearing the net out.
I think Carlson was at the top of the hash mark.
McCulloch was there kind of doing nothing either.
Yeah, and Carlson was caught up high. So this kind of lends itself to the question. Craig Anderson has played, I believe, in 41 of the first 46 games. He is an absolute workhorse for this team right now. At some point, you have to give this guy a rest. Is Alex Ellis someone reliable who you can count upon to play in a meaningful game down the stretch? And if not, do you look down to the farm to make that call?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, clearly they're going to have to give Anderson a rest.
I'm not comfortable. I'm not comfortable whatsoever playing Alden. I don't know. The players say they've got his back, and apparently he's a great team guy in the room. But
they all are.
How can you – all the backups, they have to be, right? That's why they're here. But how can you give him a game? Even, like, you can't play him against a strong club. Even you want to give up 2 points playing him against a weaker club.
Yeah, and Ottawa's playing a lot of back-to-back games coming down the stretch. And, you know, these are important games. You have to have your best people there. And I think coming into the season, everyone kind of looked at the Senators and wrote them off, saying, all right, well, they're not going to be a playoff team, but whatever happens, happens. We'll take what we can get kind of thing. And then you look at Lehner. He was expected to play the full season down in the AHL. Right now, that hasn't happened thanks to injuries and some inconsistencies down there. He split time with Mike McKenna. And that's a team that's not going anywhere down on the farm. Ottawa, on the other hand, has improved remarkably. And they're in the threat. They're threatening to make a playoff appearance for the first time in a while. So you wonder at what point do they even consider.
A legitimate playoff appearance.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So at what point do you consider saying, all right, well, obviously the developmental aspect for Lehner's season's kind of gone out the window anyways. At what point do you promote him just to let him experience this with the rest of Ottawa's young core?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair point. I think that from a political standpoint, from a coaching standpoint, the smart move is to give all the opportunity, but to have him on a very short leash.
I think he's already kind of got his leash chopped off there. It's in the last couple of... I'm not trying to be too critical of the guy, but seriously, like, how can you put him in? Every time he's gone in, he's been pulled, or...
I don't know if the last game he played was the one against New Jersey where we kind of had a meltdown in the third period. That was the last one I remember seeing him in, and he was awful.
He's played since.
You may as well put a cardboard cutout in the net.
You look at his last four games. I posted this on the website the other... or maybe it was Twitter. I can't even remember. I posted this... regardless, and in his last four games, his GAA was at like 4.7. His save percentage was at like 87.5. He's not that good, but I don't know. I'm sure he's a great guy.
Do you think there's any chance that they would bring in just a solid backup at the deadline? Just not give away too much. Just give someone who can step in and play a game if he has to. Or would they bring up Lehner? Would that be the move?
The thing is, if Binghamton gets ousted and they're not in the playoff picture, Lehner's going to get promoted anyways. Like every year you see those kids get promoted just so they're around the team and just to experience that kind of culture. So he'll be around. It's just a matter of, well, do you want him playing some games down the stretch? And I think coming into the season, correct me if I'm wrong, Brian Murray kind of said that they wanted to get Lehner into about six or seven games this season just to get his feet wet. But he has one under his belt right now. I believe that was a win against the Leafs, I believe.
Wasn't it a shutout?
No, it wasn't a shutout, but I think they won maybe like 4-2, I think.
Oh, yeah, no, but he was actually quite good in that game. I remember now.
Yeah, no, he played well. I think he beat Ben Scrivens in that game. Yeah, it's just at some point you have to wonder though. Like,
it's tough.
I don't really see
we're all speechless.
I don't really see the rationale behind bringing in a backup. I mean, even if it does cost you a low pick, because live and die by Anderson anyways. So I don't think there's any need to have an insurance policy for Craig Anderson.
So did you just ride Anderson the rest of the season?
I suppose you could. I mean, what was it? They said that when they brought him in that he was a guy who thrived on volume. But
yeah, we're finally starting to see that now after like game 40.
I think once you get to the point where the guy's starting more than 60 games, you're getting into that territory where you're getting into like the Luongo zone.
Where right.
Like keep might flame out in the second round or something.
Yeah, but you hear that all the time with goaltenders. In the offseason, we talked to Justin Goldman, who said the year that Anderson played 71 games with Colorado, he had a tough time in the playoffs. But you look at his numbers from that playoff series, they were actually quite good. But I didn't watch a lot of that series itself, so I'm taking Justin's word for it here.
That was against the Sharks, eh?
Yeah.
I caught that series, and he was playing the Sharks.
Yeah. Yeah, but there are plenty of examples, like Carey Price being one against Boston. Cam Ward has played over 70 games. He's never really been the same since that one Stanley Cup run as a rookie, right? So it's difficult to say with any kind of certainty that Anderson will flounder in the playoffs because he's played so many games. It's just, I don't know. I'd like to see Lehner get some time down the stretch just to see what he can do and just kind of blend with the team and just experience this, because he's going to be the guy next year anyways. I'd prefer to just to see him get his experience and get in some games now.
I got nothing more to add. That's got to be the move they make. It's just, what do? They release Ould once Bingo's eliminated?
Trade him for a sixth-round pick. Hopefully he turns into the next Mark Stone. Cross your fingers. But we've talked about adding a backup goaltender. How about acquisitions in general? Brian Murray's already come out publicly and said that he would like to make another addition at the deadline, if possible, if he can. He also added that if he could add someone, he would like to add a forward. It's interesting.
Please,
yeah. Part of me wants the team to stand pat. I know prior to this hot streak, I kind of said, well, even if they look like they're going to be a playoff club, I'd entertain offers for Philip Kuba, because he's obviously leaving at the end of the season anyway. So,
yeah, and I think my attitude is the same with Nick Foligno too.
Yeah.
I think those are the two guys that even if you don't add anyone on the current roster, if you lose those guys, I don't think they make you that much worse if you're able to recoup like draft picks and maybe some mid-level prospect for Foligno or something like that.
That's an interesting point about Foligno, but I think I like him. Just having him as a third line potential scoring threat, I love him on the third line. I've always said that I thought he was a solid third-line player. Obviously, he's been playing well this season. Before they acquired Turris, he was playing well on that second-line center role. But just having him, Neil, and whoever,
Smith, yeah.
Condra Smith, on the third line, I love that.
Yeah, I think, I don't disagree with you. I personally think that Zach Smith is the straw that stirs the drink on that line, but Foligno's a decent third-line player. I think that in terms of enhancing their chances this year at a deep playoff run and potentially building for the future, at some point you're going to have to upgrade either McCulloch or Foligno. So either you're going to have to turn McCulloch into a legitimate first liner and sell high on him, or turn Foligno into a legitimate second liner and sell high on him. And I don't think there's a better time to do it than right now, especially given that the team and the players are, I think the value's a little bit inflated. So.
No, that's a good point, because if you bring in a roster player now who's a forward, conceivably you're probably bringing him to play on your top two lines. You're moving one of Green and Condra, Foligno, or Chris Neal to the fourth line. Foligno could be someone who you could package with a young draft pick, and you could probably recoup someone even better, similar to what Ottawa did with Brunblad. But again, it kind of comes back to team chemistry, right? You're worried about breaking things up. It's a difficult position to be in if you're a general manager.
Yeah, no, definitely. If Brian Murray goes status quo, I'm totally okay with that, because they are a playoff team. And you want to send the right message to the guys that are not only here this year, but that are going to be, factor into the mix in the foreseeable future. But also, I don't want him to do anything stupid, like trade for, someone like Christian Huselius, who, or something ridiculous like that. I mean, I think if you make a trade, you have to bring in a guy who can help you right now as a top six forward, and who will be in sort of the more or less the core of this team, you know, for the next couple of years. And I think the only guys really that are available that come to mind are Getzlaff, but that's not going to happen because Spezza has to go the other way. Bobby Ryan and Corey Perry, I think.
Or maybe Rick Nash, maybe. Yeah.
Probably have to give up a ransom for him.
Yeah, no, for any of those players for that matter. You know what, though? If you look at Ottawa's roster right now, even if you go status quo, you can move probably a guy like Foligno, point to his career season. You could trade him as an RFA. Some team would probably be willing to scoop him off your hands, especially if he has a good playoffs, right? Just inflate that value just a little bit more. Squeeze every last...
Like, look at what Philadelphia got for RJ Umberger a couple of years ago from Columbus. So there will be a market for a guy like Nick Foligno if they really want to move him.
I agree with you. I don't think they can make that move in this season.
Yeah, I think it'll have to wait to the offseason before they do it. Yeah. No, fair point. One of the things that I thought was interesting about what Brian Murray said is that he doesn't have a problem with Ottawa's blue line right now. Since the trade of David Rundblad, I don't see many young key cogs beyond Jared Cowan and Erik Karlsson. And Erik Karlsson's at the end of his ELC anyways. So he's going to be making big dollars next season. Is there a lot to be excited about on the blue line right now?
Other than them?
Other than the fact that I feel comfortable moving forward one more year with Sergei Gonchar, who seems to be rejuvenated, and the fact that Chris Phillips finally slots in as a third pair defenseman, there's not a whole lot to get excited about, other than the fact that guys are what they should be now.
And who knows where they slot in this draft? If they get mid-range pick, it's probably going to be a defenseman this year.
Yeah, that was my whole reasoning behind sending David Rundblad to Phoenix. If you draft that defenseman this year, it replaces him within the system anyways. So,
do you guys know the status on Patrick Wierkosz?
I haven't heard anything of late. I know he was recovering. He was talking on the phone. I think Kyle Turris said he was talking to Wierkosz almost every day on the phone. But yeah, other than that, he's like the prospect that people just can't seem to forget.
I was just wondering throat-wise.
Like, yeah, I know. I think he's okay, but I haven't heard anything.
Griba may eventually end up being a third pair guy, but there's no one you can really get excited about that factor into the top four right now for the foreseeable future.
No.
I guess this draft will be used to shore up that spot.
And Borowiecki is a name that's been kicked around quite often, but realistically, you figure that guy slots into a bottom pairing anyways, right?
For sure.
So it's just interesting to see how confident Brian Murray was with his blue line, considering the goals allowed by this club. The differential, finally, for the first time this season, I think we now have an even goal differential. They give up a ton of goals. The goaltend is finally starting to round itself into form, but it's probably the weakest aspect on our team right now. And I thought that was kind of interesting because I thought that might be the area that he would like to address moving forward.
Like for next year or for seasons and beyond?
At the deadline even this year. Like, are you comfortable going into the playoffs with the third pairing of Matt Carrickner and Chris Phillips?
Probably not.
I'd like to get someone else in a Matt Carkner type build, but a little bit
faster.
2.0 version.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Pair him with Phillips. Get some nastiness on that third pairing.
I don't know who you could bring in that would fit that bill. I mean, anyone else would be kind of an aging guy that you're hoping might get rejuvenated by a cup run, maybe.
Andy Sutton.
Or you might have to wait to free agency to address it, like a guy like Tim Gleason. Prodigal son, Tim Gleason. Bring him back to Ottawa.
There will be someone out there. I mean, look at Seidenberg. There's always one of those guys that he's underappreciated, and, you know, if you're smart about it, you can bring them in. So, I mean, Gleason would actually probably be a perfect fit.
Oh, he'd be absolutely unreal, but I think you would have to overpay considerably to bring a guy like that in, unless you're sending a young contract back the other way, maybe like a Foligno or something. But I think it would take a lot more than Foligno just to bring in a guy like Tim Gleason. And then you're at the risk of watching that guy walk in the offseason. So difficult times. I'd hate to be the general manager right now because to be honest, I don't think Ottawa is as good as they're playing right now. I think they've won a lot of games. But you're using the old NHL adage, you're never as good as you think you are. You know, you're always like a little bit below it. And same with, conversely, you're never as bad as you think you are either. So it's trying to keep that level keel throughout these times. It'll be interesting. I'm still waiting for that Eugene Melnyk Fan 590 appearance where he's just, we're going all the way. Buckle up, everybody. Yeah.
But, you know, the one stat that I found was kind of interesting was the other night, and I think Ottawa leads the league in number of overtimes game played, I think around 15 or 16. And I think in some ways that's good because they're getting a lot of experience playing in these high-pressure situations. On the other hand, what that tells me also is that we're not putting a whole lot of opponents away in regulation. So we're hanging on. You know, there's a lot of games where we're hanging on and we're not necessarily putting people away. So, what do you guys make of that thought?
Yeah, no, it's a good point. Same with, I think they're still leading in terms of third period comebacks when trailing after two. I believe they have six, and their winning percentage works itself out to about 329, I believe. But I think that's even almost better than Columbus's winning percentage total. Don't quote me on that. But there are some anomalies with this organization. You look at their point totals, you think it's maybe a little bit more inflated than it should be. They've played a couple more games than a lot of the other teams in the Eastern Conference right now, so they're sitting high. Despite, I think they're 1 point back of Boston.
1 point back, 5 games in hand. The Bruins have.
Yeah. So there's lots of room for Ottawa to slide in the standings without even playing any games. But they're beating teams ahead of them for the first time this season. I think coming into January, I think the knock on the Ottawa Senators was that they couldn't beat teams like Boston, Vancouver, Chicago,
Philly,
and even the Rangers. They're a 500 team against New York, and they're finally starting to put away those. Yeah, and they're finally starting to put away those teams. So I think the biggest test in the second half will be, how does this team measure up with the cream of the crop in Boston? Because historically, they don't fare quite well. I think that's a true litmus test for this team.
And that's what all the chatter was about the last couple of weeks, too, is that they were getting to too many overtime games and this dramatic third period comeback. But if you look over the last few games, they beat the Rangers in regulation by a few goals. They beat Philadelphia in the second game of that home-and-home series by a few goals. And they also put away the Penguins, although they were undermanned, but still they put them away in regulation. So they've been picking up the wins by more than a few goals in regulation, and Craig Anderson's standing on his head lately. I'm happy. I'm pumped.
They can't control who they play, and the nice thing is they're beating the teams they should beat, and maybe the teams that they shouldn't beat, they're still finding ways to win. I mean, really, you know, even though I think that they're sitting in the standings a bit higher than where I think they should be, when you look at the Eastern Conference, if I'm looking at the other teams in the Eastern Conference, the only teams that I don't really think we can beat in a 7-game series are the Bruins and the Rangers, only because I don't think our team is good enough to beat Henrik Lundqvist in 4 out of 7 games, and a healthy Pittsburgh, but that's a big if. So I think the Eastern Conference is wide open. If we get hot at the right time, I kind of feel pretty good going into the playoffs for the first time in a long time, guys.
We were chatting off-air before we got on about this exact same topic, and those are the same teams we named.
I think Washington's a bit of a dark horse, though. And I only say this, I know their season hasn't been that good to this point.
They'll catch Florida.
And some of their star players are underachieving. But I look at that team and what they can move to bring in some high-profile guys. I look at their two first-round picks this year, one acquired from Colorado for Varlamov, and they have some like highly regarded prospects who, even though they're Russian, I think they can move those guys quite easily, and they could set themselves up quite nicely for the postseason. And a lot of people have written them off of late, and they kind of remind me of the Senators team from 07, where they started off poorly, and then they just kept gaining steam, and nobody's really talking about them. Whereas a team like Boston or New York will start to have those, like, the burden of expectations upon them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing, you know, it's kind of interesting, and I think there's a lot of truth to what you're saying, but the one thing that concerns me about Washington is that I don't think Dale Hunter's system is necessarily a proper usage of his personnel there. I mean, that's one of the reasons why they kind of quit on Boudreau, was because he started, you know, this whole defense first, and that's a team that you kind of have to let them loose, but I don't know. I mean, they are playing better as of late. We'll see what happens. If Hunter can get those guys to buy in, then definitely, you know, I think they're a legitimate threat in the playoffs, but I'm not entirely convinced.
But, I mean, if you had the opportunity to move Alex Semin plus two first-round picks and maybe a prospect like not a Kuznetsov, but some, they have a few more highly regarded Russians in the system. So, I mean, that's the kind of package I could see them putting forth to try and acquire, you know, maybe a Bobby Ryan or a Rick Nash or someone of that variety, or even a Parise or something.
Yeah.
And that,
I mean, but to me, I think Washington would need to make a move like that. I mean, they need a game changer there they need to do something major like that, I think, to give themselves a shot this year and moving forward. I think that that team is kind of stale. I think that Semin is a big part of the problem. So
you sound like Matt Bradley.
I think getting rid of Semin is addition by subtraction already. And if, I mean, if you're able to bring in a guy like Parise or Nash, wow, I think that team gets really scary really quickly.
Completely agree.
Yeah. Yeah, you touched on Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's not really that interesting. Do you think Toronto has a shot?
The top line's on fire.
The first line center is Tim Connelly. And Phil Kessel, regardless of his point production this year, I still think Phil Kessel's a perimeter player. I think you can make that guy disappear in a playoff series.
I love Mikhail Gabrovsky as a second line center. That guy is unbelievable. Like, I hate the Leafs. I can't stand the Leafs, but I enjoy watching that guy as a player.
Yeah, he's good. He pisses everyone off.
Yeah, he's a little chippy shit. Yeah, I mean, I think it all kind of stems back from that incident in Montreal where he went after the Kostitsyns, and then he's leaving the ice and he's celebrating, and the fans are just booing the hell out of him. I loved it. How can you not like that guy?
I like Grabowski.
Yeah.
You talk about their number one center. They've been in all the talk with Ryan Getzlaff or
Kurt Van Rie. Like as well, like I don't know. I think Burke's gonna definitely make a move, but
agreed.
I don't know. I don't think they can put a package together to get either Getzlaff or Perry. I don't think they. I mean, you know, I don't think Keith Ollie is a top level prospect to the point where you'd be satisfied having him. You know, like a package built around him for Getzlaff or Perry. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I think if one guy goes out the door, it's gonna be Luke Shen. Like, I think it's already kind of reached that point where.
Yeah.
I think he's even aware of it now, too, with all the rumors that have been thrown out in the last week with Van Riemsdyk, like you mentioned. So that would be the one guy.
I think Van Riemsdyk is the top end of what you can expect in a return for Luke Shen, and I don't think only Luke Shen will get you Van Riemsdyk either. Like, I think Luke Shen's value has diminished around the league a lot. So I think Van Riemsdyk, I mean, if they get Van Riemsdyk for Luke Shen, I think the Leafs would win that trade. And the Flyers, by necessity, well, they need defensemen, so I guess they'd be okay with giving up Van Riemsdyk for Luke Shen. But
yeah, we're just sitting here quiet. We can't argue with anything that you're saying. What else do you guys want to hit on?
Paul McLean, the Jack Adams. Has he become the Jack Adams front runner at this point?
I wouldn't know if I'd say front runner, but he's got to be in the discussion.
I don't know. What would be your top three if you had to pick your own?
Tortorella.
Kevin Dineen, Florida, maybe?
Kevin Dineen.
Assuming that they actually hold on to third.
They'll slip.
Yeah.
But, yeah, still, he's in the discussion.
But everyone's saying, like, all the pundits out there are going, like, oh, Ken Hitchcock. But, like, no, like, Ken Hitchcock came in during the season. So, like, he's already benefiting from that, like, typical coaching change performance spike that happens in the team regardless of who coaches the team. Like, I don't think Hitchcock should get a nomination. Like, bullshit, you know?
One of the funny things that I did before the season was I reverted the NHL standings, like using the old point systems where you're not given any points for an overtime loss. And I took all the shootout losses and victories and put them as ties. And St. Louis was actually in the playoff picture. They weren't that bad at the time of the dismissal and Hitchcock's hiring. That wasn't a bad team. The record wasn't as good as it should have been because of all these extra points that are awarded to bad teams.
How about Dan Bosma if he gets those Penguins into the playoffs without Crosby and all the injuries? Letang, who knows if that guy's coming back?
That's a good team. They play hard. I've been really, really impressed with Pittsburgh. I was at that game last week in Ottawa, and they work hard. Even though they're missing so many key guys, that's just a resilient team. It's just been entrenched in there.
If they make playoffs?
Yeah, he should be. For sure. Maybe Mike Yeo. Maybe Mike Yeo.
They're not making the playoffs.
They're dropping down now, though.
Oh, significantly, yeah.
They're toast. Someone's catching them. Well, Dallas, I mean, or Colorado.
That was the biggest smoke and mirror show in the NHL for the first couple months. I mean, who didn't see this coming, you know?
Poor Nicholas Backstrom.
I mean, I don't think there's really anyone in the West that sticks out that much. I mean, even I think Pierre Laviolette, you can make a case for before any of the guys in the West outside of maybe Quenneville.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah. Well, it seems like all the turnover is in the East anyway, so if you're going to award it, it would probably be to someone in the East.
Randy Cunningworth.
Yeah, if he actually learns French by the end of the season, I'd agree with you. But yeah, that's just I feel so bad for that guy. He's just had his.
I feel terrible for him. You know, like he never asked for the job; they gave it to him.
He's had his legs cut off. Yeah.
You know, he's done everything the organization asked him to do in terms of going to Hamilton and coaching that team. And as is typical for the Montreal media and fan base, they throw him under the bus for absolutely no reason. And I feel terrible for him.
I saw an awesome tweet on Twitter, and the guy wrote, yeah, you can criticize a coach for not speaking French, but as soon as a player speaks at all, you know, you get him out of town. It's so true. It's just... You punish the guy who speaks out against what the hell is going on with that organization. Like, you look at that team, and it's built so poorly.
It's a disaster.
I can understand from a media standpoint, okay, fine, maybe the media wants the coach to speak French, but the thing is that if Gauthier comes out and says it's the reason why the guy's an interim, then fine. Okay, you want to be like that, then what you should do, if this is what you're about, And this is coming from a French Canadian person. You guys know I'm a francophone. If my name isn't a dead giveaway already, but if they're going to be like that, then what they should do is draft exclusively French speaking players and all of this, you know, because this is ridiculous. You have to throw the coach under the bus because he doesn't speak French. Their fucking captain doesn't even speak French. Gianta barely speaks French. You know, Koivu didn't really speak French that much before him. So this is ridiculous. I mean, if they want to be like that, then. You know, they should be like that and draft only French players, and they can be the worst team in the league every year, but at least they'll be happy that they represent, you know, French culture and French Quebec. And that's all I have to say about that.
And I think of their 24 Stanley Cups, only three weren't won by an English-speaking coach.
Well, there you go.
And two of which were won by a guy who cannot read or write. So, yeah, exciting and times in Montreal.
His command of the French language is quite poor as well.
So. Yeah, but you know what? Like, moving forward, even though I know NHL realignment has kind of been kiboshed by the Players Association, but, like, I love having Montreal in our division because politics drives that organization to do the stupidest things. And assuming that Quebec City is eventually given a team and put in our division too, it is awesome. Awesome. Oh, yeah. For the Ottawa Senators.
That was crazy.
All right, guys. Switching gears. One last thing I want to hit on before we wrap this sucker up. I want to talk about an article that was featured on the worldwide leader in sports, ESPN, that discussed the top 25 players under the age of 25. Erik Karlsson, Francois, did not make the list.
What?
Have you guys read the article?
Are you kidding me?
have it up in front of me now. I saw your tweets listing all the players. Haven't read why said players in this body is or not.
Right. So I guess to preface this segment, ESPN, one of the writers, Neil Greenberg, created his list using your traditional hockey stats, goals, assists, points. And he also included some of the newer metrics used to evaluate players, like GVT, which is just the goals versus threshold, how many goals this player creates over a replacement value kind of player. And what it has kind of done is the results are skewed a bit by goaltenders and players who have played for pretty good teams. And as a result, you see...
It's stupid because it's, like, cumulative. So, like, if you look... All of the guys are, like, near 25 years old because they played longer than any of the other kids.
Right. Especially, yeah, if you're comparing a 22-year-old, 23-year-old, 24-year-old seasons to, you know, a guy who's been in the league at 18, 19, 20, there's going to be a disparity in the numbers anyways, right? But, yeah, what we've been left with is a list that has Jonathan Toews in front of Sidney Crosby. We have Tuukka Rask at number 5, who's ahead of Steven Stamkos.
Even Nick Backstrom ahead of Stamkos.
Yeah, and Nick Backstrom's been living, he's a good player, but he's been living off Ovechkin's productive years for how long?
You give any GM in the league a choice between Stamkos and Backstrom? 30 for 30, maybe 29.
Yeah? You think they take Backstrom over Stamkos?
No.
No?
Not at all.
No, exactly.
Maybe Washington's GM.
Well, to his credit, though, Backstrom's a good two-way player.
But I mean, I'm not trying to shit on him right here. Not at all.
Patrick Kane's number 4. Tuukka Rask is 5. Stamkos 6.
Even Patty Kane. That's what I'm saying. Stamkos.
Giroux, Kopitar are on the list as well. But yeah, it's. I don't want to come off as a fanboy sensationalist who just wants to shit on anything that doesn't include an Ottawa Senator on the list. But you get down towards the bottom of the list, and you're looking at guys like Marc-Edouard Vlasic on San Jose and Patrick Berglund, who I think is a really good player in St. Louis, but he's ranked ahead of Carlson.
I'd say the top 10 is pretty solid. Mm-hmm. Like you can argue if one guy should be slotted 2 spots ahead of one guy or not, but it's a solid top 10.
Aside from maybe Tuukka Rask, which I think is the inflated goaltender value, I agree with you. I think the top 10 is pretty solid.
I think it goes south after Jordan Staal at 13. And then it's just, it hits the wall.
Lucic is arguably a top 25. I don't think he should be 14th on that list, you know?
Yep.
Brian Little at 22, and no Erik Karlsson. Chris Letang at 23. You know, the fact that Vlasic is like 7 spots above Chris Letang.
Is he a difference maker? Ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Chris Stewart at 17 is weird.
Vlasic isn't even the best defenseman on his team. Like, Letang is. You know, Carlson is. So, I don't know. I think this guy's methodology needs a little bit of refinement, if you ask me.
Are you aware of the reasoning for Carlson's left off the list?
Yeah, I tweeted that yesterday as well.
Neil Greenberg replies to a fan who questions on the article how it's remotely possible Carlson's not on the list. And here's what he says. He says, Erik Karlsson has gotten 58% of his 5-on-5 starts in the offensive zone over the past few years. He also does well offensively with them, which he should, but he's no defensive whiz. Also logs just 45 seconds of ice time on the PK. So that's his reasoning, basically, for Karlsson not being on the list, which I'm not buying.
And the fact that he's almost doubled his, he's gotten to the point now where his margin on defenseman scoring this year is almost like doubling the next guy, you know?
Yeah, it's gotten comical. And I think that's, holding numbers against him for years under Craig Hartsburg and Corey Kluston, it doesn't do justice to how much his game has improved in the defensive end over the past season and a half. You know, you look at this guy, this is a guy who's going head-to-head now with guys like Ovechkin, Stamkos, and I've personally, just going to the games, I've noticed a huge difference in his play this year.
He's not bad defensively. He does obviously he's not going to be the shutdown defenseman who's going to stop the other team's guys. Like, that's not his game. But he's done well positionally, driving guys to the boards. He does get burnt a lot on the outside.
But his takeaways are up.
Yeah.
I think he leads defensemen in takeaways this year.
My attitude with Karlsson is that even if you get him to the point where he's slightly below average to average defensively, I'm okay with that because he's so dominant offensively that you can live with it. You know, Dan Boyle, Rafalski, a lot of those undersized defensemen that were really good offensively, they get by defensively, but that's not where they bring value to the team. And I think people have to be realistic with Erik Karlsson and recognize that, his value as to the team is his offensive ability. I think, he's better than Mike Green defensively.
Yeah.
And he runs that offense.
If you want to make comparables.
And his groin, doesn't tear like it's tissue paper. But yeah, keep going.
Subban's more physical, but Subban is not a very sound hockey player. Erik Karlsson has improved a lot more over the past few years than PK Subban has.
Right.
Sergei Kostitsyn's on this list.
Yeah.
But he's the product of playing within a good system too, right?
Yeah. Look at you have Varlamov, who's a former Washington goalie, and you have Neuvirth at 25, who's a current Washington backup. So
the numbers are skewed. It's tough to lose sleep over a lot of it. I don't want to dismiss the actual premise of the article itself, but there's more to evaluating a player than a simple mathematical formula.
Watch this player live.
In the world, Sidney Crosby, who I don't think you can argue against the fact that he's probably the best player in the world, is not number one on the list. All due respect to Jonathan Toews, right then and there, it kind of loses your attention a bit, in my opinion.
Fair point. Fair point. All right, guys. So we've kind of hit on a number of hot button issues with the surprising Ottawa Senators. Do you guys have any closing thoughts?
Not really.
Well put, guys. Well put.
Not really. Excited for tomorrow.
Yeah, it should be good.
To quote John Tortorella, if this is the best we got, pack it up.
Good stuff. Maybe we'll end on that note. Francois, thanks for coming on, man. All the best. Hope you're enjoying this Atlanta weather while we're enjoying this -30 wind chill. Freeze our balls off weather up in Ottawa. But thanks for coming on, man, and enjoy those football games tonight.
Thank you.
All right, man. Cheers.
Well, man, another week, another episode. Thanks for coming on, man.
Thanks for inviting me.
I appreciate that. Yeah. No, Winnipeg tomorrow.
Pumped you going? Yeah.
Yeah, I will be there. Toronto on Tuesday. Should be a good, interesting week. Two Canadian clubs, and hopefully Ottawa keeps it rolling. They have a chance to pick up 4 points.
And getting back-to-back?
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely.
For sure. Anyways, thanks to the listeners for listening, and stay tuned for another episode soon. Thanks.